All right, everyone, it's another episode of Sports and Stripes. It is 2018, Steve. Holidays, new beginnings for us. Hopefully some new things coming up. And as we expand on this, Sports and Stripes, great sporting year. We're getting into NFL playoffs, World Juniors on, college football on. I mean, this is veritable hard on of sports going on right now.
See, for me, this is like my favorite month outside of April. I mean, April you tend to have like the NBA playoffs, you know, NHL playoffs, the draft, opening day in baseball. But January, as you say, NFL playoffs, we're going to crown a national champion, mm-hmm. the NCAA. We've got the World Juniors on. Basketball's in full throw. NHL as well.
Credit card bills from Christmas.
Yeah.
Put those at the bottom of the pile. Do those in February. Yeah, it's a very exciting going on. I mean, I'm always excited the NFL because, you know, we've got so many new teams in. 8 of the 12 of them are new.
Yeah.
And what an exciting end to the season. I mean, I don't know if you're watching New Year's Eve, if you had your family and loved ones, or if you told them to screw off and just watch the game as you did at the Hippodrome.
Yeah, I mean, it's week 17, so, you know, I had to watch some of these games, and, you know, the gift that keeps on giving, you know, the Bengals gave the Bills a playoff spot.
That's an amazing, because they were 97% guaranteed for the Baltimore. Baltimore's like, yeah, just show up, wear the Ray Lewis jersey. We're right, man, we're in. It's going to be good. And then Tennessee does it. And then the Ginger Ninja with that 49-yard bomb just at the end. Which the good thing is, though, the Buffalo fans have raised $150,000 now for the Andy Dalton Foundation for kids with injuries. Thanks a lot. You know, they're sending chicken wings. Does that make everyone feel better in Cincinnati or Baltimore? Doubtful.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I had Baltimore getting into the playoffs, and for me, that was the big shock. And we're sitting here now on wildcard weekend if we get to it. And we'll talk about that in a second, but The Titans are in the playoffs, and they're not a playoff team.
No. Well, Buffalo as well. I mean, Buffalo's thrown more people through tables than they have their touchdowns, you know. But, yeah, they're not. But what a gift horse, you know, going in for, you know, but can Tennessee, I mean, KC to me is not a legitimate, they're not a legitimate AFC team either. I mean, they barely crawled through in my sort of estimation, but.
I mean, where do we go with this KC team? I mean, they started off red hot.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden they had that really bad six-game span in the middle part of it, and everyone was saying, well, they won't even make the playoffs at this point. I put my neck on the line and said they would make the playoffs.
Yeah.
They then reel off four games in a row to close it out and now have a home game in wildcard weekend.
Yeah.
I think they're pleased with where they are, because Tennessee, if you start looking at the Pythagorean like record, they should have only had about 7 wins based on their performance. They are awful.
Yes.
They weren't a playoff team when I looked at them 4 weeks ago. They're still not a playoff team. They may be one of the worst playoff teams we've seen in a while.
They're almost like what the NFC South used to be last year. You know, the NFC South is now actually really good, and the AFC is just sucky. I mean, yeah, I don't understand. I mean, they're there, but the AFC seems to be the weaker division. Although everyone has the Patriots absolutely crushing this division. So as the NFC, you're looking going, come on, give us a team, give us a contender. You don't want them to knock the shit out of each other so there's no one left. But you want someone legitimate to be able to take a stab at those Patriots.
Yeah, and I think at the moment, when we look at the wildcard teams that are in these two games on the AFC, I don't think we can make a case for any of these. I mean, KC, a lot of people made a case at the beginning part of the season. We thought, well, that they will be the Patriots' main challengers.
Yeah.
Now we're looking at a team game where, as I say, we don't know what the Patriots' identity is, what they're going to be going forward. Yeah, we think they're going to pancake the Titans, but going on from that, are they legitimate contenders? No, they're not.
Well, I mean, it also comes down to the one-man team. You've got Kareem Hunt.
Yeah.
Pretty much it. The Kareem Hunt show. So, just like when, you know, Carson Wentz gets hurt, does that really effectively rule out the Eagles? It makes it very difficult for Foles. Kareem Hunt, the same thing. If you just rely on Kareem Hunt this whole time, it's going to be a very one-sided affair for you, because people are only going to focus on that, particularly if you do get through to someone like the Patriots, who is just going to stop that show right at the get-go.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to stop that, and then what does KC do when they go behind? That's where I have an issue with them.
They can't go deep, that's for sure. You're going to throw to Kelce and maybe, you know, for 10 yards and hope that he gets another 20.
Yeah, and that's all very well in spurts, but not in a consistent game against a team like the Patriots. That's just not going to work. And so, I mean, you look at it this weekend against the Titans, yeah, they'll be absolutely fine. I mean, the Titans, again, are one of those teams, they allowed more points than they scored.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say, like, how is this a playoff team?
Yeah.
Mariota had 13 touchdowns to 15 interceptions. That's your quarterback.
No, that's not a good rating. But, I mean, KC is favored 8.5 over Tennessee this weekend. which I'm a bit suspicious. I mean, KC is always very tough to go at home, particularly with what the weather is going to be like. Having just returned from Canada, I can tell you it was balls cold the whole friggin' time. So I can only imagine what this one is going to be like as well. But Tennessee going into it, they're one-sided. What are they going to do? They're going to maybe run the ball. Mariota, as you said, he's not going to really throw to anyone deep. He's going to do some short passes, some scrambles, but they're really going to be under the gun with this KC defense, which has been improved lately, as you say, with some of these wins.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, that's where they've really stepped up. So I think, you know, Kansas City's defense is going to be too much for Titans' offense, and then Kansas City could be able to control the ball. They'll basically ram it down the Titans' throat. I actually think this 8.5 spread can be beaten. I think I have the Chiefs winning this by 10 points.
Really? Because I have it being an inept shit show where they're going to cover it. I've got it like 6 points, but I actually think KC will win it, but not by a full touchdown. I think it's going to be a low-scoring, boring affair. It's going to be the first game to kick off the playoffs, and everyone's going to look and go, what a shit show. It was like watching that Dallas game on the weekend where it was like 0-0 for most of the frigging game, and we were featuring that at the Hippodrome, and you're just like, oh my God, like this is just absolutely, this. And I could see this game being the same thing. It's going to be cold. If it's really cold, you're not going to see the ball get tossed that much. You know, if you're talking, when I left, it was still in the minus 20s and 30s, which could be in KC at this point. Yeah. You're not going to see a deep ball. You're going to see very methodical. You're going to see a lot of drop balls, a lot of mistakes. And it's going to be the team who makes the least amount of mistakes who wins. And that is boring football, particularly at Saturday at 9 p.m. in the UK when everyone's excited, drunk. And then by the time you get to the big game, which the Falcons versus Rams, everyone's going to be pissed and pissed off.
Well, I think, you know, you could probably have a little bit of a snooze through the Titans-Chiefs game so you can actually then sit up late to watch.
Well, if you're at the casino, you can't. We don't allow sleeping at the casino, as a few people found out on New Year's Eve. Crazy New Year's Eve party, by the way. All right, but, I mean, Tennessee-KC, so you see this one going as KC as a blowout.
No, I see them winning by 10 because I just think they're going to get in front, and Tennessee are going to have to air it out and see what they can try and do with this and try and stretch that KC defense. And I just think that's going to be one disaster after another.
Mm-hmm.
Once Kansas City gets ahead by 10, I think they're just going to stay on their laurels and then they're going to go bang, bang, bang. And that's, they'll just run out of clock as quickly as possible. It's not going to be a great game to watch. We all know that.
No, I mean, the only thing that's going to be great to watch would be Kareem Hunt. And it's going to be, I mean, he's had this sort of up and down season so far. So it's going to be sort of what happens with him and how he can put on the show. I just don't see it being exciting, but, you know, we'll show it at the Hippo. Come on down. All right, we'll move. Let's talk to this next one then, because I think this will be a good game.
Yeah.
The Falcons, who surprisingly are back in the playoffs. You know, they're back. One of the few teams who made it back. NFC, but they're in the wild card now against the Rams, who have been pretty strong, although I've had a few key losses that really could have hurt them maybe going forward and not being the wild card spot. But the Rams have the Gurley show. Gurley has been absolutely amazing this year. Goff has been great. The defense have played well. You know, Cooper Kupp has had a great season, too, for a rookie. Rams are favored in this one by 6.5. This is one of those games, though, I think that if the Rams get ahead, they're going to stay ahead. It's at home. And there's a hometown crowd for the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think the difference is here, I mean, the Falcons seem to have got the same personnel on offense, but not the same performance. I mean, mm-hmm. Matt Ryan's had a very much a down year. You can make a case of maybe putting up a very good performance. You know, they've always had that lethal combination of Matt Ryan, Julio Jones. But, I mean, as you said, Gurley, I mean, he's played like an MVP. I mean, he's been just one of those players all season long. You go, okay, I need to watch this guy.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams had 465 points through 16 weeks of season. That was better than any other team in the NFL. And really exciting offense to watch. Defensively, they're very good as well. I think this may be one of the best all-round teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I think the only thing you could perhaps hold against them right now is a lack of experience.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, that goes from the coaching on the way down.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a young coach who everyone wants. Yeah, you're right. They don't have as much effective leadership, but they could go on a run. I mean, if they get the confidence going, you get the youth and that confidence. They're one of those teams that I thought, you know, especially with Carson Wentz going down, this could be one of the teams that if they get moving and they keep running and they've got a really good opportunity, they start to get their play calling right and effective and balanced and mature, yeah, they could go all the way.
I mean, I think the Carson Wentz injury, I think what it's done is blown the NFC wide open.
Yeah, it totally has.
You know what I mean? Like, you took a look at it, the Eagles, I know a lot of people held against them, well, you haven't really beat anyone, but you can't beat who you're playing against.
Yeah.
they have been a well-oiled machine. Then Wentz goes down, and then all of a sudden you start looking at other teams, and you go, okay, Vikings, Saints, Panthers, Rams. Yeah. You know, you could make a case for any of those teams going on a run and going into that title game. I've still stood by the Saints. We'll get to those in a bit later on. We'll talk about their game. But that's what that's done. And the Rams, as I say, they may be one of the more complete teams in this playoffs.
Yeah, no. And I mean, I've always been one that's rallied against Minnesota, not just because they're in my division, but because I think they're pretenders and their schedule was quite easy. I don't think Minnesota, based on with a Case Keenum, you know, is really the NFC champ, nor are they have the ability to beat the Patriots.
No, I don't think they'll beat the Patriots. I mean, I think it's a very difficult one when you take a look at which teams could beat the Patriots.
Yeah.
I mean, in the NFC, I think you're possibly making a case maybe for the Rams or the Saints. For me, are possibly the only two teams that could beat the Patriots.
Yeah.
And even then, you're looking from a Rams point of view, again, a lack of experience. The Saints have been there, seen it, done it all. And I think that's the Super Bowl a lot of people want to see.
You want that veterans in there. You want to have veteran coaching, a veteran quarterback, especially if you were going against Brady. Now, interesting, I did mention, at the Hippodrome on Sunday, there was a gentleman who was talking, and he starts identifying himself to other people as being Tom Brady's family doctor. Now, of course, everyone's skeptical. He's this slight East Asian man in his 60s, very, just full of energy. Every time Patriots score, he goes nuts. So, of course, I gotta ask, are you sure? So he shows me pictures. Sure enough, confirms he is Brady's doctor. He's got personal pictures, everything. So I'm talking about the TB12 diet, which I always just thought is, you know, he's going off, oh, it's a horrible diet, no nightshade, no anything. So I said, he said it works for him, though. He believes in it. I don't subscribe to it, but that's him. And he said, but I will tell you, I'm also Gronk's family doctor. And Gronk went on the diet. Gronk has had 15 fractures since he's been on it. He said, I've told him to get off. He goes, he's too big of a man. He can't deal with it. And so that was an interesting thing. I go, 15 fractures. interesting to know. 15 fractures a season as a result. I didn't know where. But interesting little side note. Yeah. Or how. Or if it was just like a 19-year-old he met at the bar. Fracture. But funny thing is, yeah. So that's just a little insight for anyone who's wondering. Keep Gronk on that diet and maybe we'll win.
I don't think Gronk should go on that then. I think that
Gronk needs to have a word. Gronk should just stick on his vodka and teenager diet. But interesting enough, because, you know, obviously everyone is strategizing about how ways to beat the Patriots. And the Rams, to me, I think the Rams are going to win this game handily.
Yeah.
And Atlanta, you know, I don't know if they're 28-3. I think it'll be 28-3 against them, and they're just going to stay down that way.
Yeah, I have this Rams winning this very, very comfortably. Atlanta, again, all season long, as I say, they're a team that have so many issues. They may be the same personnel, but they ain't the same team as we
were. It's also, I think, it's one of those things about insecurity that they're a team, when they get down, it's almost a malaise on the team. You can feel it on them. And you can feel it in the fans. I mean, we've got some fans that come down. It's like, oh, no, here we go again.
Yeah.
There's that defeatist kind of... And I don't know if it's just something that's just sort of happened, or if it's, you know, that they've always had it as a result of last year, but that's, it's like, oh, no, we're not going to win again this time.
But it's that hangover. I mean, it will affect you. I mean, coming into this season, you know, you can't help but think back to you should have won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. You should have won. And there's a few games this year that they just totally misplayed, games that they should have won that they were blown out by. And some teams that they should have beaten that they just couldn't beat. So, I don't know. I just can't see this one going Atlanta's way.
No.
We move on to Sunday. Now, a friend of ours, you know, Ryan Call, he turned off his phone. He was at a New Year's party. He didn't want to know about the Buffalo. So, of course, I sent all the messages to his fiance. just to tease him. But Buffalo are in the playoffs. That's right. You heard it right. Buffalo are in the playoffs, playing a Jacksonville team who's also a wild card team. You know, see what you will about Jacksonville. They've been up and down. Their defense has been monstrous. Blake Bortles has been there. So, I mean, Buffalo has sort of this Cinderella story. In through the storm, winter is coming. Can Buffalo do anything in Jacksonville?
So it's the Bills' first playoff appearance since the turn of the century.
Mm-hmm. Millennials won't even know. What are the Buffalo's Bills, Mom?
Yeah. So you've got like a whole generation of people who have never seen a Bills playoff team.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's
crazy. It's the magic of Christmas. Well, you know what? The Bears fans, we can sort of be there too. But
yeah. I can't see the Bills even competing in this. I mean, even if you take a look at it, argue the case of the fact that Bortles obviously isn't great, but Bortles will... only has to play within himself.
Yeah.
That's literally all he has to do. I mean, Jacksonville didn't look great last week, but that suffocating defense against an average Bills offense.
Yeah. The running game is going to be shut down. Tyrod is going to be under pressure, you know, like, yeah, it's going to be very difficult. But that being said, Buffalo is one of those teams that anyone who can pull off miracles in this wild card, I think they are the one that could pull off a miracle if Jacksonville gets in a bus accident on the way to the stadium.
No, I remember a time when the Jags played another AFC East team, when they played the Dolphins all those years ago, and Dolphins fans always remember this, the Jags was part of like 60-odd points. It's not going to be like that, but the Bills' playoff season is maybe going to last 7.5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's when the Jags will then be 14 points up and the Bills have got no chance. I don't see the Bills getting into double digits in this game.
It's one of those things. I think it's the way I would soon look at it as Jacksonville is let them play themselves into mistakes. Because that's what they're going to do. All you have to do is keep that stagnating defense on, keep the running game on, short passes, move the ball, control the ball, and just don't fuck up and you'll beat Buffalo. Buffalo will beat themselves because as long as you keep that pressure on, Tyrod will throw picks. Yeah. Tyrod will give up the ball. So it's just a matter of them saying, okay, well, you know, how does Jacksonville maintain it? How do they keep it steady? You know, at home, you know, it could get out of hand early, or Buffalo could just keep it tight and then let it get out of hand.
I see it getting out of hand early. As I say, the playoff season doesn't even last a quarter. I'm sorry for our friend Ryan, but that's the way it is. Enjoy the moment. And hopefully it won't be another, 18 years.
Yeah, well, he won 2 fantasy pools, so fuck him. all right, here's the game everyone's talking about, the big game. This Sunday, the last game. It'll be on at 9:40 at the Hippodrome, if anyone's coming down, if anyone's around this weekend to watch it. Carolina at New Orleans, divisional match. These guys, I mean, this is these two teams that know each other, that play each other. New Orleans, 6.5-point favorites in this one at home. I'm excited for New Orleans. Yeah. I think if this is a year, I'd really like to see Breeze, you know, go out in high. Then he can go to the Bears next year. this is a New Orleans team that has a lot of things together. They've got a great running game. Their defense have come together.
Yeah.
They've been able to make this team really work. And another team that came to London this year. Say what people will, but there's enough teams in this race here, you know, that played in London this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, London teams, we get some good games, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one of the big arguments against the London games is that we don't ever get any good games and how much it affects teams going forward. Well, we can throw that out the window.
Yeah, no, exactly, because these guys are doing fine. So, but this New Orleans team and this Carolina team, which is, you know, has struggled, but still is deadly. They can still strike at you.
Yeah, I mean, this Panthers team is, for me, a strange team because they beat the Patriots, they beat the Vikings, and they narrowly lost to the Eagles. And yet we're looking at a team that's playing on the road on wildcard weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, again, is another Jekyll and Hyde team that we don't really know what we're seeing. I mean, the Newton-McCaffrey combination is lethal.
Yeah.
That's where it starts for the Panthers. The Saints improved defensively. The Panthers are very good defensively. Drew is Drew, but the thing that we said against the Saints at the start of the season was the Adrian Peterson experiment. We didn't really know how that was going to work. Thankfully, they nipped that in the bud and got it sorted because, you know, Kamara and Ingram are a potent combination in the backfield. They'll cause problems for any team out there. This, for me, is a game I'm looking forward to all weekend long. Everything else is either boring or an appetizer. That's all it is. This game, I think, has got a classic written all over it.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be very close. I think the point spread isn't right.
I
don't agree with it at all. I think this is being decided by a field goal, but I think the Saints narrowly win this one.
Yeah, you know what? I sort of looked at that at 6.5, and I was a bit worried about that. But then I started thinking about it more and more, and I think that it's one of these things that you know with Carolina is that they will make some gutsy calls, and those gutsy calls are something that can be very difficult in a wild card game, which is why I see this 6.5, in that they could make, you know, on a fourth down, let's go for it. You leave yourself in vulnerable territory, and then once you get into that hole, you get stuck in a hole, and you can go really further down in that. So I could see the 6.5. I think it'll be a tight first half. I see the over in this one being big. I think it's going to be like a good high scoring game as well. But I have the New Orleans winning by 7.5. So that was my line. But I think New Orleans is really going to open them up on this one. So, and it's going to be exciting football. It's going to be exciting for the NFC to watch New Orleans go forward because they will then be pointing a dagger at one of the other guys' throats and to figure out who's a pretender and who's for real.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I mean, I've been on the Saints bandwagon for most of the second half of the season. For me, they are the best team in the NFC. They're the team that can cause them out of trouble. We've always said against the Saints, you know, we know what we're getting on offense, but we don't know what we're getting defensively. Mm-hmm. Defensively, they're way improved than what they have been in the past. So now they can actually take that step forward and be competition for the Patriots. As I said, neutral NFL fans, I think, would love to see the Saints in the Super Bowl. I think, you know, you kind of have to give away the fact that the Patriots are going to be in the Super Bowl. So you want a good contender in there, mm-hmm. somebody that matches up with them very, very well. And the Saints definitely do that. I also think as well, whoever comes out of this game, if Carolina do win this game, I think Carolina, the other team that can make some noise in the NFC.
Sure, yeah. I mean, this is one of those decider games. You're right. Whoever wins this one is sort of that sort of, you know, sort of ascends up to, you know, the challenger. Because, you know, no one's really looking at, you know, obviously the Rams, but you're not really, it's going to be hard to see. These guys actually are going to be very aggressive as challenger. So it's going to be very interesting to see who wins this one and how the NFC goes forward. Because next week in divisional play, those will be the really big games when we start seeing, you know, who's for real.
I'm actually quite pleased in some respect because of the fact that the Rams lack experience. I'm actually glad they're playing on Wildcard Weekend.
Yeah.
Because they'll get a little bit of experience going into that. And you could have a scenario where the Rams and the Saints go forward. Could see them in a championship game in the NFC.
You could be, and that would be definitely at a very exciting championship. And we talk, obviously, for a lot of teams, the season is over. And so, you know, in the NFL, in a lot of things in hockey, guys, when they go off break, they go golfing. And in the NFL, they just wait to see what charges they're going to get, whether it's DUI or beating up a girlfriend.
Or fired.
Yeah, fired. In case of the coaches, all the heads were rolling. And some of the heads not rolling. You know, so obviously you've got our buddy Marvin Lewis.
I mean, we talked to, I mean, yeah. He was supposed to be gone.
Yeah, like, and he's extended.
Was he drunk?
You just sort of go, okay, well, you know, it's did they just watch the last game? And go, yeah, he's worth it. You know, they didn't see the whole season, the whole maniacal sort of debacle that they've put on.
With Marvin Lewis, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
That's the thing with him.
Barely making the playoffs, or making the playoffs and going out right away.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's what you're going to get. I mean, Jim Caldwell lost his job in Detroit for pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I was actually surprised that Caldwell went.
I don't know. I think Detroit, I don't know if it's because they spent a lot of money. It's like, hey, we've given you all this money. We've made Stafford the highest paid guy, and you still couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I had them sneaking into the playoffs in the NFC potentially, and with instead of the Falcons, and I think maybe not getting into the playoffs may be the final nail in the coffin for him.
No.
But it did surprise me somewhat. I mean, there were more surprising things for me. I mean, you get rid of, I mean, Chuck Pagano.
Yeah.
Right, he has a bad year with the Colts. He didn't have Andrew Luck. You could have actually made a case for sacking Pagano before then.
Yeah.
This wasn't the season to sack him.
No. No, you don't. You want to see them? Yeah, when you've got none of your tools in the toolbox, it's like, sorry, you're not a toolman. You know, to me, Hugh Jackson, 1-31, a 1-31 record, still got a job.
Yeah, but again, I always say this about coaches. Even if he'd got fired, I'm telling you now, another team would have turned around and gone, you know what? You know who's the solution to all of our problems?
Hugh Jackson.
That's the man.
Look what he did with Cleveland. He did nothing. I mean, so. You know, you got Baker Mayfield just looking forward to taking over that team.
He's starting crying.
Oh, my God. I'm going to Cleveland. I don't even like Cleveland. I mean, you sort of, there's, you know, you got Carroll, Vance Joseph, Dirk Cutter, all these guys sort of safe. John Fox, you know, getting rid of John Fox. But then extending the contract and extending Pace's roles. I mean, there's a lot of problems that I have with some of it. Some of the coaches, it's the coach and the general managers. Yeah. And particularly when you have the general manager, when, you know, especially with the Bears, they make the decision to bring Trubisky in, don't let the coaches know. There's a real disconnect amongst coaches and general manager in terms of communication. And I think that's where we see a lot of problems with teams. You know, that's where San Fran had the problem before. And now you've got Lynch, I think, breaking that down and really adding a moment of sort of clarity. But other teams, you sort of go, you know, what about the Green Bay situation? Where's the communication that goes on with coaches and head office?
But that's what you see in dynasties, is with dynasties you see that great relationship with a general manager and a head coach. Mm-hmm. You know, you might get a season or two with, you know, where things are going very, very well when you don't have that, but ultimately it's going to go wrong. And when it goes wrong fast. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Lynch for San Fran, great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really like that. I mean, we've just also heard as well in the last couple of days that Gase is going to keep his job in Miami as well.
Yeah,
he's not exactly Mr. Popular.
No, exactly. But then you have, like, everyone wants the next Sean McVay. That's what everyone wants. And everyone's just hoping. I mean, everyone's looking at Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator for the Patriots. He'll be our guy.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants this young guy who's going to moneyball them or inspire to be able to get them through. And it's the case is there's really not that many coaches like that available.
No.
And you also have to have the respect of the front office, but the respect of the players, the discipline of the players, to give you that hard work ethic. And when you have someone like McVay, he's jumping in with a young team, a team that's willing to be inspired by him. I don't think you're going to find that when you're going to go into a veteran team or a veteran squad. I mean, to me, one of the best things that I've seen in the Bears this season has been Mark Sanchez. Mark Sanchez has been playing without ego, been helping Trubisky, been, you know, firing him up. He's one of those guys you start looking at going, hey, he could be a good coach of the future.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, look at some of these guys. I think it's sometimes a bit difficult when you're trying to, you know, take a punt on one of the younger guys, you know, and have a look, see how it goes out. But at least give it a go, because otherwise you just have this, like, inner circle of coaches that just revolve around one job after another.
Exactly. And so getting on that, we've got the other big thing to talk about is Gruden and the Raiders.
Yeah.
Now, they're even talking about offering him a piece of the team.
Do you want a piece of the Raiders?
I don't know. Do you want a piece of the Raiders? I mean, it just seems to be this, because he's got, Gruden to me is a bit of a Donald Trump, in that he's this loud guy on television. Everyone believes what he's saying because he's been saying it. He's been out coaching for a while, but is he one of these guys who's just a bombast, who will actually put him back into the role again? He may not be as fully committed. He's been on TV. You know, he's been a celeb. And suddenly the day-to-day grind of a real job, maybe not something that he really wants.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting move from them. I mean, the Raiders felt like they had to make the move after getting rid of their coach. And it'd be interesting exactly how, again, he morphs into this head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he's been an analyst, for want of a better word. And I can take or leave Gruden as an analyst. I can take or leave Gruden as a head coach.
Yeah, and, or, I mean, it's having his brother in power as well on another team. I mean, it's one of those things that he comes in there and maybe they turn around a bit of their season. But at the end of the day, once the pressures of the job and the criticism start mounting up, is he really going to be in there, you know?
And the other thing as well is when you get a coach like in there like that, like a loudmouth, it's all very well when things are going great. Mm-hmm. When things aren't going well, players turn off.
Oh, yeah. So, and because that's it's a polarization of ego, you know, and you've got enough egos on that team, as we well know,
yeah,
that, you know, that the criticisms start and you think kneeling's an issue, you know, wait till Marshawn Lynch calls him a motherfucker, you know.
It's not going to go well. The Raiders, who we had high hopes for this year and were still in the playoff contention 4 weeks ago, have now got Gruden as a head coach.
Yeah, well, let's see if they can turn it around. Now, let's the big exciting thing we'll talk about. NCAA final. It's been a very interesting road to get here. Oklahoma, humble yourself. big come from behind Georgia, 54-48 over Oklahoma, and Alabama absolutely pummeling Clemson. So now we got Georgia, Alabama. You know, Alabama's favored by 4.5. Georgia has a lot of spirit. Alabama had a tough end of the season, still have a really strong team.
They do still have a really strong team. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't like this game because Bama didn't win their SEC championship, mm-hmm. So they're playing this game. There's a lot of dislike towards Saban and everything else. I think it's an interesting one, and as people tell me, I say, this was what was this series and playoff was supposed to sort out.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It hasn't sorted out,
which no. There are going to have to be a change again next year.
Yeah, I mean, people have made a case at time for Ohio State.
Yeah.
Auburn, you know, UCF have kind of thrown their name into the hat because they beat Auburn in our bowl game.
Yeah, UCF crushed them. Yeah, it was a good game too. You got Wisconsin as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're not going to please everyone, unfortunately, because whether you like it or whether you don't, the SEC is a power conference in college football. Alabama are a tremendous team. They've got talent all over the field. It's an interesting, isn't it? Because it's again, it's master against pupil.
Yeah.
It's Saban against Smart. I mean, Smart's part of Saban's coaching tree. The interesting thing is here is that Saban is 11-0 all time against his proteges.
Yeah.
So he teaches him.
It's like Darth Vader.
Yeah, he teaches them everything that they know, but not everything he knows.
No, exactly. There's a few little things you don't know. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a high-scoring game, I think, based on the you know, Georgia putting up 54 points, Alabama putting up 24. Is this one that is going to get out of hand, though? Is this one that you think Alabama could... Because I've got... I can see Alabama just starting to really put a throat punch on these guys.
Yeah, I can. I mean, I think the big thing here is if Alabama gets ahead, we know what their defense is like, and then they'll just turn it into a trench battle.
Yeah.
And that's what they're going to look to do in this game. Georgia must stay ahead to win this game.
Georgia's got to be a bit cagey. They've got to come up with some innovative plays. They've got to come up with some ways of airing the ball out, catching that Alabama defense off, catching that secondary off. You know, they can hit a lot of deep balls. They've got a lot of movement across the back of the field.
Yeah, and I think that's the way they're going to try and attempt them for me from an Alabama standpoint, because I think they're going to load the box and say, well, look, you know, you're not going to be able to run the football. Now, that's what you do well.
Yeah.
We're going to stop your run. We're going to make you want to air this ball out. So we're going to see if we can try and tempt you into some mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
If they can consistently move the ball in the air, then I think this becomes a really interesting
game. That's the only way they're going to have to win this. Yeah, you're right. It's just going to be a tough game. It's going to be Aaron. We're showing at the Hippodrome. It's on at 1 in the morning till 4 in the morning. So, yeah! that's one of the things we face living in the UK, living in Europe, in that a lot of these games, the final games, air for primetime viewability. Which is
but not for us.
Not for us. No, not for us. Although there was some things like when I was back in Canada, which I was visiting, it was really fun to see going to a bar that had like just a regular bar, 72 televisions in it. You know, and some of them 100 inch, and you're just like motherfucker. You know, like this is so good. Oh, and the food, buddy. Oh my god, we're gonna have to get something organized here. To anyone who's got a venue, late night venue, let's talk, because there's a room for a late night North American venue here with good food, open, where people aren't wasted. They just want to watch sports. Another thing, which we should jump in before we get to the NBA. well, do a quick prediction on the NCAA final for you.
I've got Bama winning a close one.
Okay, I've got 52-48 for Alabama.
I think it might 100 be a
points.
Bit less.
100 points, baby. 100 points. So, junior hockey. I was back watching junior hockey as a Canadian. Obviously, watching it, we're very interested in it. What struck me? The first thing about this junior final taking place in Buffalo, nobody's there.
No.
Like, absolutely nobody. Even the last game, I think Canada, 5,200 people in it. The outdoor game, there was nobody there. And, you know, it's worrying because, you know, in Canada, we can sell them out. In Montreal, Toronto, sold out. Buffalo, it's technically the sort of the Canadian side, I guess. But it's been absolutely abysmal in terms of turnout.
Yeah, a very, very bad idea, it seems, because people haven't gone to see. I think people have talked about the ticketing has not been great.
Mm-hmm. The website looks really good, but but when you look at it, the one thing that really goes with Canada and Canadians is when we host it, there's a really big turnout. Even if you were to do it in a smaller city, like you could have done it in the Kitchener-Waterloo area that I'm from, population of around almost 1 million around there, and you would have had good turnout because you would have gotten, you know, 10 or 15,000 each game. Whereas this outdoor game, which I don't know if you watched it, the amount of snow that came down.
Oh, like,
when I was there, the temperatures ranged from minus 10 to minus 40 Celsius. And we were getting sometimes, you know, 30 to 60 centimeters of snow. That game must have been about 30 to 40 centimeters of snow coming down. You saw how much they were shoveling. Yeah. And you could also see, everybody hates playing those outdoor games because you can't see the friggin' puck.
No.
It's so hard to see the puck. You see these guys with the black makeup underneath their eyes. It's one of the worst and hardest, and anyone who talks to those NHL games are like, I can't see the puck.
Yeah, it's a really bad idea. I mean, I'll have one rant after another about the whole playing games outside. They're just not fun to watch. It was a novelty effect 10 years ago. Let's just put an end to it.
Unless you do something novelty, as you say, with it. Maybe the puck is orange. Maybe it's something
we're not
exciting.
Going there again.
No, we're not. But you can't really see it. The fans, it's hard. I mean... Unless you're doing it, you know, smaller venues or something like that, or something unique, it's just difficult. And I mean, this tournament, you know, we've got the United States has knocked out Russia.
Yes.
So it's going to be U.S. versus Sweden in the quarterfinal. Canada played Switzerland, and of course everyone was worried because their coach, Wolfener, or whatever his name was like, the Canadians are going to crush us. Yeah. And we totally did.
I love the realistic statement, though, when he come out and said, yeah, Canada just do everything better than we do.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's not a good way. It's not really Swiss-efficient confidence. But, you know, I think, what do they have? He was talking about the amount of draft, and there was like seven Canadians in the first round. I think we only had one in the fourth round. But the rest were first and second rounders.
Yeah.
But has not been playing well. As far as I'm concerned with Canada, I don't even know what the team is. You know, there's no real identity. Sometimes you got, you know, some scoring going on from one side. The Americans, though, to me, have looked like the better hockey team. Bellows, who's been absolutely amazing, 6 goals in the tournament. Son of Brian Bellows, who used to play for Kitchener Rangers.
Yeah.
And Canada's playing the Czech Republic, which should be an easy win. And it looks like it'll be Canada-US in the final. You know, the Canada-US game, I watched that outdoor game. We set it up, we were beating them early, and then just took the foot off the gas and allowed the Americans to come back.
I mean, I think this is the final we're looking at. But, I mean, for me, I think the USA-Sweden game is also about Rasmus Dahlin. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm very high on Rasmus. I mean, he looks like the number one overall pick in the NHL draft in 2018. The scouting at the juniors is like, wow, this kid. You know, a lot of people have been watching him over in Falunda, over in Sweden. That's where he currently plays hockey. He's not even 18 yet. 13th of April is his birthday, so that will be when he does, you know, officially be able to do just about anything. But he's a defenseman with very soft hands that plays like a forward. A lot of people think that he could potentially be better than Erik Karlsson. Some people talk about him in the same breath as like Niklas Lidström. Certainly the best defenseman since Victor Hedman to come out of Sweden. A bright future ahead for this kid, and I really looking to see him against USA in the semifinals. I think it could be really interesting.
And so you have, like me, I have this personally, and even though I'm a Canadian, I have the Americans winning this tournament, and I have it in a tight one. I hope it's not a shootout like that last game was, because that shootout was absolutely deplorable. And particularly, you don't want shootouts in a final of any tournament.
No, I mean, we've had some wonderful shootout moments over the years in the Olympics, but it's not something that I want to see. I want to see his game decided in either regulation or overtime, whatever. I do have USA winning this one, but it is going to be a very, very close game. US have got a harder game against Sweden and Canada have against the Czechs.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I don't think there should ever be a shootout in the final. I think that you just play till the game is done, because it just can really suck the momentum out of it. But yeah, I have the Americans winning this one. We're almost out of time. Let's jump into the NBA. Get Isaiah back after 228 days off with a hip injury. Thinking that maybe he'd be playing a little cautious, and that was not the case. He was pretty aggressive. How is that? You know, you need a player to take the pressure off of LeBron, who's like third most in playing time. How do you think this is going to affect Cleveland going forward down the run?
Yeah, I mean, they turned around and said they won't play him in back-to-backs, which is it's an interesting one. I think, you know, that's one of the ways they are looking at things. It does take the pressure off. You know, it is like having an entirely brand-new player brought to your team like halfway through the season almost. I mean, he performed some heroics for Boston last year on their playoff run. He will see more playing time as the season goes along, but they've got to reduce LeBron's minutes.
Yeah.
That's the first thing they need to look at. You know, see if they can try and mesh him in, see how he looks over the next 20 games, because come playoff time, they're going to need him.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the Cavs are still the best team in the Eastern Conference. Until somebody knocks them off, I'm not convinced. Put LeBron in the finals every single year. I don't care about the Boston argument. They're a team that have been very much up and down lately. Toronto, for me, the interesting one. We all know they're going to blow up come playoff time.
Yeah.
But what I will say is DeRozan's knocking down a three now.
Yeah.
Which has always been one of those things, you know, this guy can't shoot threes. If he can knock it down on a consistent basis. But for me, if I'm playing DeRozan, I'm like, well, okay, we'll let you have a look at your first couple.
Yeah.
And see if you knock it down first.
And see how your confidence is after that.
Exactly. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting run in the Eastern Conference, but you can't bet against the Cavs, and they've got back an all-star caliber player.
And what are you thinking about the West still? I mean, the Rockets have still been playing good ball, but the Golden State, they're still a deadly team.
Yeah, Golden State are still a deadly team. I mean, when you think about the fact that they were without Steph Curry, you know, people looked at them, kind of knocked them one way or another. The Rockets had that hell of a run. The Warriors are the best team. They have the best record. They have the best record on the road. They got Steph Curry back. I mean, he just had like a regular day at the office and he's returned 10 threes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's Steph. It's, the Warriors are still the team to beat. I mean, a Warriors-Cavs final is something that a lot of people don't want to see. But
yeah.
It's what you're facing.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Get used to it. You know, we are literally just playing out the next 6 months of the season just to get to that.
Yeah, no, exactly. All right, well, I mean, let's look forward to NBA. We've got the game here in around 2 weeks here in London, which we're still working on NBA UK. We'd love to come down. So, I mean, what are you looking for in the season going forward, the NBA? You know, who... I mean, essentially, it is just watching to see how the Warriors and Cleveland fare down the final, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's interesting to see who may make a run at a playoff spot. I mean, for me, I would throw the Sixers out there. I mean, they've been a bit up and down. They're currently sitting as the 10th best record in the Eastern Conference, but they're exciting to watch. The Pacers have kind of fallen off lately. I was never convinced that they were a playoff team. The Bulls have been better of late than everyone expected them to be. I think the Western Conference is set as it is, but the East might still shake up a few things. I mean, Miami are very up and down. I think the teams at the top, as I said, you can kind of, you know, say them, they're set in stone. Like Washington are very much set in stone as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of down from about 6-7 downwards. I think there could be some movement.
Well, let's quickly, we'll touch on, we got another minute, we'll touch on quickly the NHL. The NHL, you've got Las Vegas, who, what the hell's going on, Vegas? What happens in Vegas, apparently, is affecting the rest of the world.
Take them seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't want to take them seriously, but, I mean, even last night they shot at Nashville.
Yeah.
I mean, 3-0 with them. They've got the best record in the Western Conference. 56 points. The only other team in the NHL that has single-digit losses is Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tampa have looked phenomenal.
You would never even
Vegas
think,
beat Tampa.
You would never even think of mentioning those two in the same breath.
No.
I mean, Vegas has beat Toronto again last night.
Yeah.
Or not Vegas, or the Lightning beat them. But, yeah, they're playing really solid hockey now.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas don't make mistakes. I mean, they lead the league in penalty killing. So they don't get themselves down. You've got to try and find a way to beat this team. And then I got Fleury back in net, who, come playoff time, I think Vegas fans are going to realize what kind of playoff goalie he is, because
mm-hmm.
he's very much up and down.
Yeah.
But they're scoring goals. They're second in the league in scoring. They're second in shooting percentage. They do all the things right. They're very well coached as well. That's the other thing here.
Yeah.
They got a solid group of players. But again, it's going to be interesting for them. At the deadline, do they make a move? Are they buyers at the deadline? We all thought they would be sellers at the deadline.
Yeah.
But now...
Yeah, do you buy,
you've
do you buy
got
for the
to
push?
Buy now.
Yeah.
You have to, because you don't know when you're going to get another shot at this.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an interesting decision for them to come up with.
All right, and so one last question before we end this, baby. If you were to choose then one or an NHL team from each, like Stanley Cup, who would you choose at this point?
I got to go Tampa. Tampa Bay in the East. They've been my pick for a while now. But I think over in the West, I like Nashville.
Okay.
I really do. I think you go with the solid netminder there with Pekka Rinne. They've still got the solid nucleus they had from last season. I think for me, they're Nashville.
And for me, it would be Toronto in the East and Toronto in the West. Because Toronto has the ability to beat itself up and Toronto would knock itself out. So Toronto versus Toronto. Thanks a lot for listening to Sports and Stripes. This is Wade and Steven. Find us on Audio Boom. We will be on more venues and platforms coming forward. Make sure you watch our videos, which will be out there as well. Have a good sporting week.